From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 24th day of July, 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson, look at the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated, and get an update on what that MFP payment, details due this week, might mean to farm income this year, and the debt-to-coverage ratio. Krista Swanson of the Farm Doc Daily team will join us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Jackie Vakes is here from Stuart Peterson to take a look at the marketplace. Hey, good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Oh, good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with the support and resistance levels. I think it's important to check and see if they've changed this week.
Well, they really haven't, but I'll give them to you. For September corn, 424, 410, and 380 are support levels. Resistance, 442, 469, and 513. December support, 431. We actually went through it yesterday, but closed above it. 410 and 397. And then resistance, 441, 473, and 514. On beans, September, support 885, 870, and 835. Resistance 904, 935, 984. November beans, support 892, 863, 815. Resistance 924, 948, and 998.
A couple of other housekeeping items, or at least what I'll call housekeeping items from our regular discussions. The export inspections for the week, what they look like?
Well, wheat exports are 28% ahead of a year ago. That's a little slower than last week. They were 31% last week, but way ahead of the forecast, which would be a 2% increase from the USDA. Corn, 12% behind a year ago. They were 11% behind last week. USDA says 14% down for the season. Beans, 24% behind a year ago. Same as last week, and the USDA is seeing a 20% decline. So we're right in the neighborhood, I guess, is what I'd have to say.
And has the managed money changed its position at all?
Oh, yes, it has. I tell you, Todd, I wonder about these guys. We went from being 41,000 contracts long in soft red wheat to 2,000 long. For corn, we went from 190,000 long. We're at 146,000 long this week. Beans went from 32,000 short to 52,000 short. Soy meal from 19,000 short to 30,000 short. And soy oil from 27,000 short to 34,000 short. So you can see they're lightening up on their long positions and basically getting shorter.
Hey, you and I have both looked at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center's hard freeze dates over time, and producers can just tap in Midwest Regional Climate Center and then growing degree days, and they'll find this. But some interesting stuff to be found there, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, a hard freeze, of course, is 28 degrees, and that's going to be a big concern for us. You know, we get a hard freeze before we're black layered, and that is not going to make for a very good test weight crop. So I looked up in Illinois from 1981 through 2010, 90% of the time there had been a 28 degree hard freeze between October 21st and the 31st in the north, November 1st and the 10th in the central part of the state, and November 11th to the 21st in the south. I hope that we can stay within those dates this year. That would be really nice, you know, but it's just, it's going to be something we'll be talking about, I'm sure, quite a bit over the next weeks and months.
That would feed the bull, but that's quite some time off. The bull doesn't seem like there's much left for it to eat yet this week, I suppose.
No, it's almost like it's on a diet, I can tell you, because, you know, I think that when you look at I think the market's waiting for the August report. You know, that's when the USDA is going to come back with the resurveyed acres. And, you know, it's likely we're going to see another yield adjustment. You know, it's pretty sad when the RMA comes out and says there's 15 to 20 million acres of prevent plant, and 6 to 8 of that could be corn, and we can't even get a nice big boost out of that. When you look at the last 9 weeks on December corn, we've traded a range from 422.5 up to 473, back down to 420.5, and we still have that stinking gap down there at 420. I was wishing we would have closed the gap, but we didn't. Now, Bloomberg, they have what they call their 260-day volatility. That is near multi-decade lows. And so it's very similar to what we looked at as we moved into the 2012 peak. So in 2012, the 30-day grain volatility peaked at 38%, and we're currently at 24%. And currently the 260-day is only at 18%. So there's certainly, you can make an argument, you know, that we could see a lot of volatility come into this marketplace and, you know, just take us off. I really think this year, if we're going to see a big rally, it's probably going to come from October to December, when we just basically have more information. And, you know, I think it's interesting. Everybody's really hopped up on corn, but I think despite the large carryout numbers, beans could be what really pulls us upward in this marketplace.
Why is that the case?
Well, number one, when you look down into Brazil, Brazil has exported 54 million tons of soybeans so far. 8 to 9 million tons will be exported during the month of August. And so they're already sold. That only leaves them about 8 million metric tons of beans. And so, you know, that could support why we're hearing rumors, you know, that China's probably going to come to the U.S. for delivery on beans from September forward. So I think if we start to see China in the market buying, that's certainly going to give the market a reason to want to cover some of those short positions. China right now is the destination for Brazilian beans at 74%, and they figure by the end of the year it's going to be 80% of their total volume. So the big thing down there is the exchange rate. And at the moment, we're running at about a 3.76 to 1. In other words, they get 3.76 reals to $1. Now, if that would fall back to 3.5 to 1, and the last time we were there was 2018 in May, then that takes away the competitive edge that Brazil has in the international marketplace. So we really need to keep a close eye on what's going on with the exchange rate as well. So I really think that beans have a good chance.
I was thinking about this just a little bit, and it seems to me that freight still remains one of their largest problems down there.
Oh, my Lord. You just hit it right on the head, I'll tell you. They just came out with the new freight rates. Just listen to this. It's hard to believe. The new freight rates take into account 11 different types of cargo, the number of axles, the distance traveled, the tolls that have to be paid, the number of fixed costs, such as depreciation of the vehicle, capital costs, wages, taxes, insurance, and then variable costs, which include the cost of fuel, tires, lubricant, maintenance, and et cetera. Now, can you imagine how complicated that is? It's just an absolute mess. And so the fines for not paying the minimum freight rate right now are $135 to $2,840. But as of Monday, the minister of the infrastructure suspended the new freight rates. He said until he and the representatives of the truck drivers have a chance to meet, they're meeting today actually on Wednesday to discuss it, because the Brazilian truck drivers are saying, hey, you know, we're probably going to go back on that strike. And we know how serious that situation was the last time, you know, that this happened. And so they're going to try and avoid it. But how complex and complicated can you make something? I mean, you know, it's like, holy smokes. I thought our government was bad sometimes. This is kind of crazy is what it is, you know. And I was just thinking, too, one of the things that I was surprised by, there's actually going to be some beans harvested in Brazil starting this next month. And it's in a state called Roraima, which is the only state in Brazil that's actually above the equator. So they plant in April and May and harvest in August and September. But it's only 100,000 acres is what it is. So it's not enough to, and it's so far away that it's not enough to make up for the difference as to what, you know, the shortage is going to be from an export standpoint.
Hey, what do we know about their livestock production?
Oh, yeah, Mato Grosso. You know, Mato Grosso is not only the Brazil's largest producer of beans, corn, cotton. It's also the largest, they also have the largest cattle herd. They have 30.33 million head. In that one state. Can you imagine that? That is just, it blows your mind. But if you've once been down there, I mean, it's such a big expanse that it's easy to see where they could actually do it. I thought this was interesting. The cost per head right now is $358 is what they have to invest, because yearlings have just gone up in price dramatically, as well as corn and soy meal. So you know, they're feeling it at the same time, but 30.33 million head. Wow. amazing.
Hey, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate it much.
Jackie Vex is with Stuart Peterson, joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Look us up, listen to us on demand. The address is WILLAG.org. Well, as you may already know, sometime this week, the United States Department of Agriculture is expected to release details of MFP2. That's the Market Facilitation's payment program for this growing season. The expectation has been that there will be about $50 an acre available across the United States, though those numbers really aren't known. Yesterday, Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue mentioned $15 as the minimum payment rate, and that half of the money that would be available would be made in the first of three tranches. That's to come very, very soon to farmers. Gary Schnitke and Krista Swanson took a look at what difference this might make to an Illinois farm in the central part of the state and one in the northern part of the state. I caught up with Krista. She's part of the Farm Doc Daily team and asked her to explain just exactly what they looked into.
We wanted to look into financial performance over the next 5 years. We have the Gardner Farm Income and Policy Simulator tool that we use to take the information from his budget plus the simulation of an actual farm using the Illinois FBFM data of farms in a given region and of a given farm size. And we wanted to look at, you know, first of all, what does the next 5 years look like? But also we know we're getting market facilitation program payments, but we don't know the amount. And so we wanted to look at, you know, a few different levels of how that impacts financial health over the next, particularly in 2019, but over the next 5 years as well.
We may know the amount of the MFP payment yet this week. However, I'm wondering, when you plugged in the $50, what difference it made in 2019 income for Illinois farmers.
You know, and you're talking $50 an acre, that makes a huge difference in the income figure. But looking deeper into that, it makes a big difference in the financial health of the farm. Without a market facilitation program payment, we see the farm slipping from year end 2018 into 2019 on all measures. Getting that payment helps keep it, reduce the financial erosion of the farm. Even with that payment, income still drops substantially from last year, but it's enough to keep it at a level where it can maintain through this year and you know, keep operating into next year.
That MFP payment on that 1,700-acre Central Illinois farm, by the way, made a big difference in the income. Without an MFP payment, the farm this year will lose about almost $18,000. With a $50 payment, it'll make about $67,000. By comparison, in 2018, that figure was $175,000 in income off of that farm. And I suppose when you look forward into the 2020, 21, 22, 23, incomes get better. But without MFP payments in those years, there's not much income there at all.
No, there's not. And in fact, you see more slippage because they, you know, because this farm entered 2019 in a strong financial position, you know, it can weather 2019, particularly with the market facilitation program payment. But if we assume that, you know, this year we're seeing the price spike in corn because of the expectation for a short crop, but you know, if you apply, if you assume that we go back to trend yields over the next 4 years after this year, if we saw a leveling back to, you know, around $4 and $9 for corn and soybeans with trend yields, incomes are, you know, pretty low and not really enough to maintain the liquidity, solvency, and capacity that this farm needs.
In the article, Krista, you and Gary Schnitke use a debt-to-asset ratio figure, but you also use a debt coverage ratio. Can you explain what that is and how it changes over the five-year period?
Yeah, so debt coverage ratio is a measure of capacity. So the reason that these three were using the current ratio, the debt to asset and the debt coverage on here, is that those are things that a lender is going to be looking at. Important measures. I mentioned a few minutes ago, liquidity, solvency, and capacity. Those are important things, and those are measures. So debt coverage is basically your total income, a ratio of the amount of income you have to cover your debt obligations over the coming year. So that is your operating and your principal payments on your longer term debt. So this farm enters 2019 with a really strong debt coverage ratio. It's 202%, which means that they have more than double the income to support those debt obligations that they have over the coming year. Without a market facilitation program payment, this farm's debt coverage ratio drops to 59%, which means, you know, they only have 59% the income, the amount of money they have, you know, only covers 59% of the debt obligations aside from everything else that they need to cover. Like the expenses and that sort of thing for maintaining their business. With the market facilitation program payment, even with a $25 per acre one, at least it brings them back up above 100%, which means that they have the funds to cover the debt obligations.
And from the financial health perspective, I assume it's that 2023, the last one out, that makes the big difference in the health of the farm and its projections.
Exactly. And like I mentioned, we return back to price levels that are hard to work with trend yields. You know, in the past couple of years, we haven't had great prices, but we've had several years of really exceptional yields in most of Illinois. And so that has helped farmers. We're kind of in the opposite situation this year, particularly for corn, where we have the best price we've seen in 5 years, but unfortunately, we don't have the bushels to sell at that price. What farmers really need going forward is you know, a sustainable price and good yields all together.
Krista, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Yep, thank you.
Krista Swanson is a member of the Farm Doc Daily team and authored a new article posted to the website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu discussing the impact of the MFP on this crop year and through 2023. Let's take a look now at the weather forecast for the United States and the planet. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Hey, Drew, thanks for being with us on this Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, well, thank you. Hopefully you're enjoying the beautiful weather we've got right now. I know that's not necessarily what everyone wants, but at least it's pleasant out there for right now.
You know, it's not bad at all. I think farmers are okay with it. They wouldn't mind a little rainfall along the way, but this 80-degree highs and dropping down into the 50s or 60s of lows in the nighttime hours doesn't seem to bother them, although it doesn't put as many growing degree days on very quickly as that last week did. What can you tell me about the forecast for the rest of this week and into next?
Well, you know, for the next, we'll say 4 or 5 days, we are going to stay in a dry mode here. There'll be a few showers around, but they will have absolutely no significance on the crop or field conditions. There's a frontal system that'll cut through the region this weekend late, probably come across Saturday night into Monday or Tuesday. And at that point, many areas across the region will pick up on some rain. And moisture totals at the moment look like they'll probably be something of the order of a quarter to three quarters of an inch. So it's not going to be a big soaker. But there could be a couple of spots that might get more than an inch of moisture, and that'll help buy a little bit of time. But we are going to experience a little bit of warming before that occurs, and then we'll cool down just slightly behind it and then warm up again. So we're going to be looking at temperatures that are fairly seasonable and a tendency here for evaporation rates to take away a lot of this moisture fairly quickly after it occurs. But for the crop that's reproducing, it's not a bad scenario. For the crops that are struggling, it's okay. Obviously, we would like to have a better soaking of rain, but as long as we can keep those temperatures down from the extremes, I think most folks will probably be okay with that. But it's a long way to maturity here. And the month of August looks like it'll probably be near to slightly warmer than normal. So there's a bit of good news there with possible increases in growing degree day units during that time period.
That's all well and good as long as there is above average or average rainfall in that month. What do you see?
Yeah, and that I don't necessarily see much of. I think we're going to see some showers around, but the month of August is probably going to come up a little short on the moisture. It's not going to be absolutely dry. We're not going to see a 1983-style hot, dry pattern here, but we are going to have below-average precipitation. We're hoping that we get enough timeliness in the precipitation that the crops will hang in there, but it is a bit of a concern. I would say at this point, totals for the month will probably run from maybe 60 to around 75% of normal. There will probably be some areas that will see less than that 65. So it will be a dry biased month. And if we can keep the temperatures from being exceptionally hot, I think that'll certainly help a lot. But as you're suggesting here, it's still not going to be easy street at all.
Can you turn your attention to the safrinha or second crop corn in Brazil? That's been or is in the process of being harvested. Do you have an update of those regions?
Nationwide, the second season corn harvesting in Brazil is 67% done. Now, Mato Grosso, which is the nation's biggest producer, is 89% completed with that. And it looks like the weather is going to continue to be quite favorable as we go forward through this next several week period. So field work should be able to advance without any kind of hindrance from too much moisture.
So as that crop was coming in, that was putting some pressure on the marketplace in Chicago. Turn your attention to another part of the world, France. We've been talking about that a little bit over the last month or so. Last week, there was some expectation that they'd have high heat again. Did that come in, and what problems did it create, if so?
Yeah, the heat is underway right now. Yesterday was the first of the three hottest days. Today will be the second, and tomorrow will be the third. And then they'll see some relief. What's most interesting about France is that their first heat wave occurred around June 26th, and they have not seen a good soaking rain since that heat wave took place. And so most of that country is running very short on moisture, and it's just one big stressed field out there. The environment that they're in right now, because it's so dry, these temperatures are going to record levels. We already saw yesterday upper 90s through about 105 degrees Fahrenheit, and I think some unofficial readings are higher than that. And that doesn't sound too bad from our perspective, but in France that doesn't occur, not very often, and not out of the southwest. The next couple of days will generate similar temperatures, and then they'll get some cool down afterwards. The crops are pretty seriously stressed, at least those are not irrigated, and it's going to be interesting to see what the bottom line is for corn as well as sunseed and some soybeans that are produced there.
And if I recall correctly, France is one of, if not the largest production area for agriculture in the western part of Europe.
That's correct. It is very, very important. And I will say that their soft wheat crop probably escaped a lot of this potential damage. Everyone has suggested the crop move along fast enough that it wasn't seriously harmed. Wouldn't surprise me to see a little quality decline in the bottom line and maybe a slight reduction in yield, but I think for the most part that small grain crop has probably come off without a big issue.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right, have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.